Blog Talk Radio.
All right.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling. Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Travis, do you think John Cena is always wearing a WWE t-shirt on Friday night near a brick wall with a live feed ready to go in high definition?
Yes, and I think that's why he was so excited that the camera, that the you know, red light came on. He's like, oh, it was my chance.
So it was a little corny, yeah. In terms of his execution. A little too convenient. But that said, the top story coming out of the show is a major match announced for 2 weeks from tonight on SmackDown. Roman Reigns proposed to Sami Zayn that they team up, or Paul Heyman proposed to Adam Pearce after Roman Reigns told him to do so, that Roman Reigns would team with Sami Zayn to try to get rid of one thing kind of standing in the way of Sami becoming not an honorary Us, but an official Us, official member of the Bloodline, no more asterisks. But they got to get rid of Kevin Owens first. So it'll be Reigns and Sami against Kevin Owens and a partner of his choosing. And on quite short notice, the previously advertised for December 30th SmackDown, John Cena interrupts the closing segment on SmackDown with the Bloodline and reveals he got a text from Kevin Owens saying he had wrestled at least one match for the last 20 years in WWE, and he was running out of time to keep that streak alive. And that, more so than any other reason, he agreed to team with Kevin Owens in 2 weeks. So your thoughts on that major match? At first, I thought they were going to milk it for a week, but I mean, with holidays coming up, it makes sense to establish it tonight.
Yeah, it's one of the many things that has changed in the post Vince era. Is that booking matches weeks out? I think we're all, as fans, like the idea of something to look forward to in a week or two or three or five.
Yeah.
I'm good with it. It was not what I expected, but a nice surprise.
Talk about Sami Zayn's demeanor through all of this, because I mean, he's such a delight to watch, and he's so eager to please Roman. He's so excited to be with the cool kids. His emotions are just, we're with him on this roller coaster ride. And his nervousness when Reigns said, this was going to be a good night for you, but, and then Sami misspeaks and says, I'm his only friend. I'm sorry, I mean his only friend for a long time, but I no longer am. He's an ex-friend.
Yeah.
And you know, just that on edge with everything he says in front of Roman. And then when it was revealed Cena would be KO's partner, Sami suddenly went from, we'll wipe out KO, he won't bother us anymore, to, oh, that's kind of the worst case scenario. And of course, everyone wonders, how does Roman feel? And all eyes are on Roman. Sami just continues to be great. And I thought this was another great night for him.
It was. I knew it wasn't going to be an official, that the deal wasn't going to be signed, so to speak, with Sami and the Bloodline when he didn't actually have his hair cut. I just was like,
oh. He had it tied up in a nice beard trim, but yeah.
Yeah, the beard for sure. But the way we speculated on this week's East Coast cast of what type of haircut and how many parts he's going to get and how sharp his shape-up's going to be, and
yeah,
I was a little disappointed just for that, but maybe, I'm holding out.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So, in general, just talk about the John Cena return, how you feel about that under these circumstances, and review his performance a little bit more in terms of that promo, because it's cornball John Cena.
It was classic corny John Cena.
Exactly.
And it was fine because we haven't seen it in, 5 years or however long it's been consistently. So when you pop in and get to do your shtick that we all remember and love or love to hate, that's fine. Good for Cena, good for the get, good for the storyline tie-in and making it about his, you know, having that extra thing about how he's never, he hasn't missed a match. You know, he's wrestled every year, once at least a year for 20 years, probably longer than that if he started wrestling, what, 2000 or so. But that was, that was, I like that. And Cena was Cena. He was over the top, even kind of even for Cena. Like, I think he bought it a little extra with the enthusiasm.
He's very Hulk Hogan-like in that respect. It's just like, you know, Hogan just gets into that mode and cuts the Hogan-style promo. And he gets, even if people don't believe he's anything like that anymore or, is, you know, or was anything like that before the red light comes on. Sure. But, yeah, it's just like, I mean, I don't know if Cena just thinks that's what I do or people would be disappointed if I didn't or if he just doesn't know any other way. And so, you know, some are going to like it because it's, quote, vintage cornball John Cena. Others are going to groan. I thought Roman just sort of smiled.
Or both. I kind of groaned and still liked it. But at the end, that was fun.
I mean, having him not do that every week does help the cool factor of WWE, you know, quite a bit. Roman is I don't know what percentage more cool than John Cena, but a lot more. And I just love Roman just sort of smiling like, ah, we walked into that one, but we'll be okay because I'm Roman Reigns.
Hope Cena in the match. I hope Cena keeps it basic and rudimentary, even because I just remember him getting dropped on his neck by Shinsuke because the timing, and it wasn't. I don't think Shinsuke's fault. From how I think the move was supposed to do something else, and Cena took the move like he was doing another thing, and I think it was all Cena because he had been out for 2 years, or you know, hadn't wrestled and was already a part-time act. So I hope now, even longer out of the ring, even you know, older, even less mass on his body to help him do certain things and absorb certain things. I hope he keeps it basic. Throw some hip tosses, maybe an abdominal stretch.
I have a feeling Kevin Owens will work almost the entire match. Bill do a hot tag, and we'll get some punches and you know maybe or maybe not some bumps from Cena, but there's no reason for Cena to be trying to prove anything by doing anything too crazy in there. But you know it's if you're going to be opposite of two people and you want to be safe, Sammy and Roman are two good people to be working with if you want to be safe. Travis, where do you think they're going timeline-wise with Sammy in particular? And where do you think Cena and KO shake out when it comes to Roman and Sammy? Like, how far are we away from Sammy and KO teaming against the Usos or Sammy against Reigns? Or is Cena now in the mix when we start looking at the Royal Rumble or WrestleMania for a big match? Is it a tag match? Is it a singles match? You know, obviously the Austin Theory rumors are out there, and then there's all kinds of I don't know that they're clickbait articles, but like you know, rumors turn into here's what the backstage speculation is, and now we're going to turn into a big headline story to get a bunch of hits. You know, of the list of all the options for John Cena at WrestleMania if he wrestles. So I don't know how this changes that prediction, and it probably is a bit of a moving target too in terms of nailing down what Cena's match will be.
I think for Sammy specifically, I think the timeline, I think Elimination Chamber in Montreal is where everything comes to a head, one way or the other. And I think we all know it's going to be the other. And but I think that a month or so, 6 weeks out from WrestleMania in Montreal, he's not going to main event WrestleMania one of the nights with Roman Reigns. That's not where I'm going, but the whole thing, this whole Sammy Uso storyline comes, so 6 weeks or however long we got to Elimination Chamber, 8 weeks. For Cena, I haven't thought about him as a WrestleMania having a featured match at WrestleMania. I'm not necessarily, I don't want to see a John Cena match at WrestleMania, particularly. Is anyone that you can...
Not Austin Theory? a potential, not passing of the torch, but, you know, the look in the mirror and see a guy who's compared to you, but there's stark differences, and it's a moment, and if Theory does grow into a top star 5 years from now, he had that moment with John when John still, you know, looked like John Cena?
Yeah, there's that. Yeah. Absolutely, especially if they're hell-bent, or not even hell-bent, but if they're looking to make Austin Theory a big deal 5 years from now,
yeah.
That is something you would do, and that means Cena. He has to go over Cena.
Yeah.
I don't think you have Cena.
Well, I think you could have a moment with a WrestleMania moment with Cena and still lose, but then have that, you know, sort of drive your character, or, you know, lead to fits and spasms and you know, going after other people. There's different ways. There's different ways to, you know, it's even Theory, you know, losing the Money in the Bank and then getting all intense. It's like you can lose, but then end up winning
because
the character's refreshed. What about, look, not to get too far down on the WrestleMania speculation, because I want to focus on SmackDown, but what about Cena versus Logan Paul?
That doesn't do anything for me, but.
Yeah. Do you think it does
totally,
for business? For,
yes.
Yeah.
I see that being a big deal, and I think there's some really interesting places you could go with that, personality wise, and how does Cena react to a Logan Paul type? How does Logan Paul I don't know how the injuries, what the injury stuff is with him, and what his timeline is, but that could be cool, even for SummerSlam next year.
I know, yeah. All right, well, a lot more to talk about tonight, including more with Bray Wyatt, a standout match with great crowd investment in Gunther and Ricochet, and more. So we got a lot more to cover. We'll do it with our callers and our emailers. But first, let's introduce ourselves and give out the phone numbers and emails if other people want to join the conversation. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, December 16th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, the newsletter, the website, and our podcasts. And this is one of many podcasts I do throughout the week. Hope you're checking out the other ones, including our free Blue Logo show, the Wade Keller podcast. The flagship earlier this week featured Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net. We've also got some cool flashback episodes, including a recent flagship with Travis Bryant, who is my co-host today after SmackDown. He is of the PW Torch East Coast cast. Travis, welcome back to the co-host chair. How do you like the remodel of the co-host studio?
I like the colors. I really like how things meld and mend with each other. No,
yeah.
That's great to be back. Appreciate the invite.
Absolutely. Thanks for accepting. Good to have you. We got so much more to talk about. Tell people, so I don't forget, about how they can hear more from you every week.
Man, go to eastcoastcast.com. Follow us at East Coast Cast. I mean, we have the new StreamYard deal. There's eastcoastcast.com will give you almost over 600 episodes of archives, and that's kind of the catch-all right there. If you go to eastcoastcast.com, did I say that enough times? Eastcoastcast.com.
Hey, it's better than plugging Twitter. Who knows how long before we're banned for saying the wrong thing about Elon Musk.
I'm pushing it, too.
Yeah. I mean, I got to get my ducks in a row before I want to risk, you know, my friend Aaron Rupar, who's been a real good political guy, you know, chronicling a lot of things in politics. He just got banned out of nowhere yesterday, and now he's over on Post, which is a new, which I'm on too, a new kind of Twitter. It's a little different than Twitter, but mostly.
You didn't go to Truth Social?
No, I didn't.
Surprise. No, you were Aaron Rupar. I'm surprised. Seems like a nice fit.
Yeah. So we might be over at Poster or other startups soon if Elon keeps acting up like this, free speech, unless it affects him. But I might see if we can. Are you trying to get banned by him? Is that like a goal?
No, I was just bullshitting.
I mean, it's not,
I'm not on there enough to care.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, let's give out the phone numbers and emails or email, and we'll get on with the show. The number to call is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. That'll flag you on the switchboard so that we know you want to be on the show. Otherwise, you can call that number and listen in if that's easier than streaming the show through the website over at wadekellerpostshow.com. You can also email our show now or anytime at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Let's roll with calls and begin with William in San Diego. William, thanks for calling. You are up first. What do you want to bring up about SmackDown tonight?
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to stay on topic with the main event segment. And, you know, one of the things that they've been pretty good about kind of navigating with the Bloodline is, I mean, they're such a cool faction that you almost kind of run into the risk of people getting booed against them. But I think they've done a pretty decent job until now. But I think they were kind of running into I almost kind of wanted to throw like a red flag with how, you know, when Roman was kind of framing the whole thing as, well, you know, I wanted to turn you into a full-blown ooze tonight, Sammy, but because of Kevin, I don't think that's possible tonight. And it almost kind of got me worried for Kevin a little bit that, you know, they could potentially, you know, if framing it that way could potentially spell some trouble for him in terms of the reaction that he could get. But I think having John Cena as his tag team partner was the right decision. If there's anyone that could, you know, kind of circumvent some of that, it's probably John. I don't know. Do you guys agree with that premise that maybe they were running into a little bit of problem? And that, you know, John Cena is a good fit for that.
Trev, what do you think?
Well, Cena's a good fit just because he's Cena and he's in the main event, and that's, if he's going to be around, that's where he fits. But as far as the cool factor and with the Bloodline, I think that's a legitimate point. They're cool, and you kind of want to cheer them. And what was it again? You said they're running into trouble with.
Yeah, William, you were real muffled for a minute there, so just kind of restate kind of that key aspect of your question.
Yeah, definitely. I think that they were running into trouble with the way Roman was framing, kind of, or scapegoating, I would say, Kevin,
right.
As the reason why. Sammy wasn't getting, you know, accepted into the family.
And
does
that spell trouble for Kevin Owens, like, in a way?
Yeah, as a main face in terms of a reaction, I think. You know,
Cena's going
to
be gone.
I was just going
to
say.
He's
going to
have the match, go ahead, sorry.
Well, so, William, sorry, I'll just jump in. Because I want to ask you, William, are you saying it's trouble for KO storyline-wise or trouble for him in terms of the crowd reaction because fans are going to want to see KO lose so Sammy can become an official lose?
Yeah, in terms of crowd reaction, could it have led to potential problem where people would have resented him because of that framing that, you know, I think people really, you know, if you look at the crowd reaction, they really like that dynamic of Sammy with the Bloodline, and I think they really want that for Sammy. You know, as much as Sammy wants
for
to play himself to be full-blown ooze, they want it for him. And if, you know, Roman is going out there saying, it would have happened, but I don't know, Kevin keeps getting in the way.
Yeah, okay, that's the point. Roman's been, or Kevin's been there, he's been around. That's not a new thing. That's sociopath Roman Reigns putting an obstacle in front of the guy just so he can see him squirm. Because why all of a sudden, why now is KO still a problem? Like the big proof was War Games, right? Like he put his body on the line. Y'all won the big match. That was the just because Kevin's still around, that's not Sammy's fault. You can't know. That's Roman Reigns being scumbag sociopath Roman Reigns making entertainment for himself. And it backfired.
And I guess, is this also potentially just sort of Roman's final verification check of Sammy's loyalty to the Bloodline instead of Kevin Owens? And putting Sammy opposite of KO. So Roman is watching up close Sammy without reservation going at Kevin Owens, like for a full match. And it's sort of that final test before, yeah, we'll give you the – we'll remove the honorary title. Like, I agree with you. I mean, I think Roman enjoys messing with Sammy because Sammy wants it so bad. Mm-hmm. And Roman enjoys people wanting something so badly that he has power over, and he will milk it and take sadistic pleasure in it. But I do think there is a level of I think he genuinely has affection for Sammy. His, you know, Roman's character has affection for Sammy's character, and he wants to give him a loyalty test.
Right, but as far as Kevin Owens though, I don't think the fans are going to resent him. They know Roman's playing everybody and is the guy pulling all the strings, at least in a lot of senses. So to answer that part of the question, I think the crowd understands the position. The fact that the crowd is still bonkers for Sami Zayn while he not debases himself, but not far from that every week. It's cool and it's fun and it's entertaining, but would you want your friend to be like that? Like in high school, could you imagine like if one of your friends, assuming you weren't in the cool crowd, like in your friends, like, you know, totally like, you know, hanging out with the jerks and the popular kids, just because, not that those two are synonymous, but you know, it's, yeah, they're not going to resent Kevin Owens.
And I think, too,
at this
like,
point in the storyline,
the fans in the moment might get wrapped up in wanting Sammy to earn Roman's loyalty because they're in this kind of weird sphere of wanting Sammy to get what he wants because they like Sammy, even though he's debasing himself. And so I'm real curious how they tell the story of the match because, they Kevin Owens is not just, you know, a Washington general. Like, he is a major star in this. He's not just there to be a body to take a beating and be – subject to a development between Sammy and Roman. And so, but I don't think fans are going to boo Kevin Owens, you know, beating up Sammy, going on offense against him. And even if they did, let's say that happened, and they're just like, we just want to see Sammy succeed so he gets to be an official Oos or Bloodline member, they're going to cheer KO after Kevin Owens' next promo and in his next match that isn't in that exact circumstance. I'm not worried. I guess I'm not too worried about Kevin Owens. I think some people are at the mercy of booking, and I think Kevin Owens is just so talented. And as you say, Trav, he's got like such a history with fans. He's still good at what he does on the mic and in the ring. He'll be fine. That said, the booking of the match should take into account what William has brought up because it can change the dynamic of how it comes across on television. And, you know, it's sort of like, you know, they say to lawyers, never ask a question of a witness that you don't know the answer for. You know, never put wrestlers in a match, a major match like this, without knowing how the crowd's going to react, because you want to structure and execute the match in a way that accounts for that. But I am in a position right now trusting this story to account for those things. I don't always do that with wrestling booking. I do trust this story. So in a way, I'm like, let's just sit back and watch people who put a lot of smart people who are putting a ton of thought into this. Show me how it's done.
Wade, they can't afford to bungle this at this point. It would go down in history as something, whatever it was, like if whatever bad thing you could imagine happen, however they book themselves into crap after, you know, 800, you know, days of really good stuff. And yeah. And I love the numbers, how it just reminds you, they say 800 something days for Roman and then 516 days for the Usos. And you're like, oh, okay. So a year into Roman's thing, he got them all whipped into shape. And everybody got on the same page. And it's like, yeah, remember that year leading up to everybody getting it? That was good. Main Event Jay was established. And it's just it plays into the history. And they don't run away from what happened just last week. They, you know.
Yeah. Let me bring William back into it. William, anything else you want to follow up on?
Yeah, just wanted to add a little bit more into that, and then I'll move on quickly. I do think that I think we're in agreement that they need to be a little bit careful. But I think that maybe Travis's way of looking at to how crowds react is maybe a little too logical in that, you know, obviously, if you think about it, yes, Roman is being manipulative and he's gaslighting maybe a little bit Sami Zayn and whatnot. But, you know, I think they're mostly guided by their emotions. And if they, in the moment you feel they feel that they want Sami in the bloodline, that's what they're going to be driven by as a car driver. But anyway, I want to talk about the opening match. And my question was going to be about who do you think the secret assailant or whatever mystery attacker was. But on social media, they actually revealed on WWE social media that it was Xia Li. So I guess,
how do you feel about they did a thing on TV.
William Cole mentioned that in commentary. I actually didn't even slip it into my report. I didn't even mention my report on PWTorch.com, so I'm glad you reminded me to do that because he did mention that on commentary that they found out it was her. I didn't see on social media how they revealed it. Like, how did they – what did they – Travis, did you see how they revealed it?
Okay. I did not.
I saw it was a pretty short clip. As security was dragging her away, you know, Pierce came into frame and he kind of took – it was kind of like a Scooby-Doo moment where he took the mask off her or the hoodie off her and it was revealed to be Xia Li, and then they just kind of went off frame. But, yeah, I guess, to my question, how do you feel about this setup, I guess, of setting up a mystery attacker and then having that reveal? I mean, is it a little deflating if it's, you know, Xia Li? I mean, on one hand, they've been doing so many debuts and returns and whatnot recently that I'm kind of, you know, glad that it's not someone new. Brand new person or something like that. But at the same time, it is kind of disappointing to have that kind of setup and then it just be, it sounds like
that's why they did the reveal 20 minutes later, William. Because it wasn't a big, they'll try to make it as big a deal as they can, but because it wasn't a debuting person, it wasn't a returning woman, it wasn't, you know, some new person even from NXT, that's why, yeah, they gave it to you a half hour later and let you know that, oh, Xia Li. So
why mask her in the first place then? What's the storyline reason for that?
Just to create some, you know, kind of, to give you something you thought, like, oh, we're going to get a, like, you initially thought, oh, wow, we're going to have a mystery attacker. But those are stupid. No, take the mask off the person. And you don't have just some body running around mysteriously attacking folks. So I like the fact that they didn't draw it out at all, and we got to find out who it was a half hour later. Because I'm not a fan of things that wouldn't happen in real life happening in something that's supposed to be somewhat connected to real life.
Yeah. William, any follow-up on that or anything else?
I kind of see where you're coming from. I guess they kind of wanted to have their cake and eat it too in a way where, you know, they wanted some of the buzz of the mystery attacker, but at the same time, they were smart enough to know that maybe Xia Li wasn't going to generate that much, was going to be maybe a little bit of a letdown. So in a sense, I kind of get that. I guess. Another topic I wanted to bring up, how have you guys been feeling about, Bray Wyatt? I mean, personally, I never been too much into the supernatural stuff. And, I feel like, Vince got scapegoated a lot. I mean, he was in charge creative, so it's fair to, you know, that the blame ultimately lands on him or would have landed on him. But I do feel that, maybe Bray got a big pass just because he was, popular. And I'm seeing some of the stuff that he's coming back with, and it kind of has me worried. And I don't know. I feel like maybe I'm not following the storyline myself, like, too well. Like, I feel like I just kind of want to get to the point of, like, what's going on? What's his new character about? What's his sidekick or whoever about? And I wish he would kind of keep it a little simpler because he teased us when he came back with the first promo about this is the real me or whatever. That was a very strong promo, and I thought it showed a lot of promise of, you know, finally getting stripping away some of those, you know, smokes and mirrors. But then we're kind of going back into that, and I'm not feeling too hot about that.
Yeah, we've got a couple emails on this topic too. I want to get to, including an interesting theory from one of the emailers. But Travis, I'll get your initial thoughts first on the developments tonight, which included Bray laughing when Uncle Howdy came out onto the stage. The question is, I think, was he laughing because it's I'm Sinister and this is my cohort and we've revealed ourselves, or laughing at LA Knight, or laughing because now he has been proven to be right that he and Uncle Howdy aren't the same person, even if they're not aligned. Bray Wyatt's laughing because LA Knight, he's now shown LA Knight, it was not me all along. There's an actual physical being who is attacking you who is not me.
Yeah, no, the latter. I don't think they'd go the route of the former. That would be too. Yeah, no. This is the better story. Like I told you. Now you have to deal with it. I don't know why LA Knight was so. What? Like, okay, the guy's got a mask on and the smoke is there, but if you were willing to attack and physically confront Bray Wyatt, why not run up on a stage and kick that guy in the face and find out who he is? Like, why are you backing away like you saw a ghost? Okay, you're shocked that, oh, wow, it wasn't Bray, but why doesn't that instantly turn into, holy crap, some guy I don't know is beating me up every week? I got to go find out who this is. Like, so when he does the, I'm backing away, I'm so freaked out, I don't know what to think. It's like, I know what you should be thinking. So I didn't like that part of it, but I thought Bray certainly was laughing because it was, I told you it wasn't me, and now you're going to have to deal with this guy who I'm scared of.
What do you think of the pace? William sounds frustrated with the pace. And
I'm the opposite of William.
Yeah.
Pace is great. The fact that Uncle Howdy finally made his, and when William was saying about the opening promo, or his first promo about this is the real me, well, that was before they had shown the Uncle Howdy stuff. And his whole return with the full life, or I should say life size, you know, versions of his little creepy puppet people. There were hints that this is where they were going the whole time. They didn't try to fool you, William, to think Bray Wyatt was just completely like you were just going to get boots and trunks Bray Wyatt for this run, like. No, you're going to get friggin' artistic Bray Wyatt because that's what Bray Wyatt does, and somebody there wants to capitalize on that and do it at least in a fun, good way this time.
Is there anything supernatural about this at this point, or are they walking that line?
Well, Uncle Howdy can somehow control the house mics with his booming laugh.
Well, there's that.
Stupid. But no, you know, no, not yet.
Yeah,
the smoke,
yeah.
Again, but that's just...
Yeah, there's a certain thing baked into the WWE experience, which is that when I run in, the music is ready. When someone challenges someone, they're just a foot away from walking out and answering it immediately. If you're given a text message, you're near a live feed, and you're dressed up in WWE gear.
The ring ropes are this amazing barrier. When bloodthirsty fighting guys, you know, one guy to rush into the ring, we saw it with Braun Strowman, and the other guys just got out the ring. And Braun was like, oh, damn it, I can't get back. I can't get out of the ring and chase him now. Like, they made, yeah.
So yeah. So, I mean, there are certain things we sort of have to accept to not be just absolutely, you know, beside ourselves constantly with frustration. I could do without... secret conversations live on television, like the Usos had about Sammy's night. Like, there's other ways to do that than to reveal in front of a live camera on national television. Because the pact with viewers, I believe strongly, is if a viewer sees it, then any wrestler on the show can be texted or told about it, even if they weren't there for
it. We know they have random monitors set up for the interview stations. Not random, because they're set up for the interview station, but wherever they set up for, you know, the backstage person to be, they sometimes go, hey, what do you think of this that happened a week ago or yesterday or whatever? And they've established that there are monitors and TVs. People watch them in really weird angles on WWE TV all the time over the years. So we know there are monitors of the show happening.
Yeah, and they have phones.
Yeah,
and you don't think Sammy has somebody who's going to call him and go, hey, do you know?
You don't think Kevin Owens, who's being presented as the guy who's trying to get Sammy to see come to the light, you don't think he'd be like, hey, I'm watching live. These guys are Heyman and stuff. They're making these suggestions, or not Heyman, Jimmy's in there making these suggestions and saying this and that. Of course.
I draw the line, well, not only with that, but also just things that are not physically possible. I can deal with the WWE production cooperating on fog filling a stage when somebody walks out. It's sort of, you know, the presumption is people have entrances, we're in showbiz, we have that stuff ready to go, and if they show up, we push a button. What I can't deal with is if Uncle Howdy showed up on the stage, but then suddenly he's in the stands, in order to believe he's the same person. And then suddenly he's floating through the whatever, you know. And I just don't think they've gone that route. I'm going to go back to William and ask if he's still there, what supernatural aspect has kind of crossed the line for him in this incarnation of Ray. And you can respond to anything else, William, too.
I just want to add a little bit and kind of clarify or maybe defend myself a little bit. When I mentioned that original promo, I mean, I didn't think that, you know, he would actually, like, come back just as Bray Wyatt, Trunks and wrestler, normal guy. I meant it more as, you know, they gave us a taste of what a real, more down-to-earth Bray Wyatt could be. And that's kind of what has made this whole, you know, next few weeks kind of less easy to digest, I guess, in the case that, you know, we know what a Bray Wyatt who speaks from the heart could be like. But now we're back to, I don't know if he's supposed to be like some demon or whatever.
That was Bray Wyatt 18 months on the show, or however long he was gone, promo of from the heart kind of thing. You can't, you know, you don't want to try to even replicate that. But I do get what you're saying. He wasn't, especially the last couple of weeks. And you're right with the LA Knight stuff. He's been hearkening back. But I think he is going to be more down to earth Bray Wyatt than he was before. There's no need to jump off now just because you're still going to get artsy fartsy, you know, Bray Wyatt with his over the top segments.
Yeah, and
all right,
William,
anything else you want to wrap up with?
A little bit on that. Just to be honest, it is a bit of a.
Yeah.
Love-hate relationship with the Bray Wyatt stuff, because I'm not, like, super into the paranormal stuff, but I do kind of bring that, kind of like that it brings, like, some variety to the show. So, I don't know. It's kind of love-hate, as I mentioned. But, all you guys get to other calls. Thank you for taking my call.
Great. Thanks, William. Good evening. Our number, if you want to join the show, is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. We'd love to hear from you. All right, up next, Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, should we play your jingle for Travis?
Yes, of course. Come on. Of course.
All right, here we go. Here we go.
Let's go to Tennessee. We're talking to Sean. Let's go to Tennessee. We're talking to Sean. Talking to Sean. Talking to Sean.
All right, you're official, Sean.
Who's this guy we're talking to?
Sean from Tennessee.
Sean. Okay.
Travis.
Hey, Don, how? What's on your mind, bud?
It's been. Well, I wanted to say, Travis, it has been a long time, man. It's good to have you back on the show, man. I'm. It's good to talk to you again. How are you?
It has been. Yeah, I'm fine. Things are swell in my life for the most part. But yeah. Yeah, for a while there, I wasn't participating in the fandom. And yeah, no. I kind of got out of rotation, but I've been back, you know, the last, you know, few months, like a lot of us have been. So yeah, here we are.
Yeah. Well, we are here,
and I hosted a pro wrestling show and didn't watch pro wrestling for like a year and a half.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. No, I love what you do with the East Coast Cast. You and Cam and Rich, you guys all do a good job. I enjoy that for sure when I get a chance to listen to it. I'll switch topics and I'll go to the Gunther Ricochet match, which I mean. Here's my only dilemma. Okay, so the match was fantastic. I mean, no doubt about it. I can't argue that at all. I mean, Ricochet, again, is phenomenal in the ring. The only thing I would maybe nitpick again, and I think I brought this up, Gunther had one of his matches, because he does his part so well, is I still think, again, I wasn't sold. I told Zach today on the SmackDown preview on YouTube that I wasn't going to get into any near falls because I knew there was no way Ricochet was winning. You know, and that's my problem with some of these matches, some of these rematches where Ricochet, this is the third time facing him. You know, they've done a good job. The video packages, I want to say too, the video packages during the show were awesome. The Gunther one was really, really good. I liked that they're letting him talk more for himself, you know, more in English, you know, good English. But I wasn't sold on the near falls, even though the crowd was into the match, which I love too. The crowd sometimes wasn't
really
invested in that. Yes, they were so invested, and I
they had some
that
really quality cutaways to the crowd that didn't take away from the match, but really added to it.
Yes, but the only problem is it's not a problem. It's just kind of my thought. I still thought Gunther is selling too much. Almost, I Ricochet got so much. Like, going back to Kofi last week, or 2 weeks ago, I think it was 2 weeks ago, I thought Kofi, even though, again, he's been around for a long time, he's, you know, been a good champion, he's done a lot of good things, you know, even though the New Day is completely stale, he is a great wrestler, but even Gunther sold too much for him, I think, even. And in this match, even though they were trying to get me invested, which they did a good job of, and Cole does a great job, he got too much. Is that too harsh on that? What do you guys think on that? Because it was a great match, though. I love the match.
Yeah, so Sean, I watched the Road Warriors up close destroy every opponent they had in the AWA and changed the way me as a fan looked at some of their opponents. You know, the Fabulous Ones came in as a hot act that is on the cover of national magazines, and Hawk and Animal no-sold for them in the AWA and destroyed their credibility in my eyes. They made Baron Von Raschke and the Crusher look like old men. On and on. It's just, I mean, it was hard to find opponents. They brought in King Kong Bundy to team with Crusher Blackwell as two 400-pounders to try to take them on, and it felt credible, you know, having them against them because they had the size to not just, you know, the Warriors couldn't just no-sell for them. You know, and Hawk was popping up in no-selling Jerry Lawler's pile driver in Memphis.
Pile driver, yeah.
And on and on. And you know, I said that the Road Warriors were a scorched earth policy, a legendary tag team, amazing in their presentation, but every territory they went to, it was scorched earth. They left it worse off. And I'm just not a fan of acts that are like that. Now, that said, I don't think Gunther's body language a couple weeks back, just running scared, made sense for his personality.
Right.
But I think you kind of have to show some vulnerability so that you can have some give and take. Otherwise, because he's talented enough to do it, he can go out there and have a banger with any number of wrestlers, including Ricochet, as we saw tonight. You want to take advantage of that. Goldberg couldn't. Like, Goldberg was an act, and I argued with Bruce Mitchell about this a lot, is if Goldberg didn't have the capability to do give and take matches. He just wasn't competent, and he wasn't in that realm of being a wrestler. He was fantastic in the role that he was in, but it had some limitations. There's sort of a clock ticking down on how long you can have him just plow through everybody. I like that Gunther isn't this indestructible, no-selling force who they're just setting up to take on Brock Lesnar down the line, or whomever, you know, like, you know, I'm okay with him looking strong, but also selling. He's taking a beating. He's actually, because he's so credible in what he does, and he ends up, I think, giving a boost to anybody he sells for at all, because they've done, I think, a great job with him. That said, what you're bringing up, Sean, is not without merit, which is how much does he sell? How long does he sell? And I would say with Gunther, there seems to be an awareness, Travis, when he's selling, like at ringside tonight, when Ricochet made a comeback, it didn't last long. And then
nope.
He just pummeled him with a chop.
None of his comebacks lasted long, and that was the theme of the match, and it was even the theme of the finishing sequence. Like Ricochet had him, but was doing his thing, and he got slammed down and manhandled, and boom, and the match was over.
So was there any point where you think, he needs to look more dominant, or do you think they found the sweet spot or close enough to it? Or what? How would you change the way his matches have looked at this point, given the trajectory he's on?
Well, given that and given the range of opponents from in this last, like when I think of like the bangers that they've had either on TV or pay-per-view with Gunther defending that IC title, it's Shinsuke, Sheamus, Ray and Ricochet, and I think I'm forgetting somebody in there that had a TV match with them that was really well done. And
Kofi was fine, but it wasn't as good.
Yeah, no, it wasn't Kofi. But they gave 2 weeks of notice and let you know and built it up and then made it a big deal and did the whole championship ring announcing and all that. This stretch, he's had some, really good stuff. And I think he sold for everybody differently. And with Ricochet, I think Ray got more sustained. I think the Ray match was why we got this match. I think because of the reaction and the way people talked about that match 2 weeks later, it's just this, TV match for the IC title. I think they said, okay, Ricochet's the guy that can closely replicate, or in a sense, that match. Let's have him in a big primetime match.
And frankly, now that they've figured out how to present Ricochet in these vignettes, as opposed to putting him out there with a live mic, which just doesn't go well for him, or, corny scripted promos, and now they're having him pre-tape stuff and they're wrapping imagery and different settings, Vegas Strip tonight. You might as well try to get more out of him, And I mean, to me, Ricochet came out of this stronger, even in losing. And I think Ricochet's in the best place he's been in WWE just for hanging the way he did with Gunther. So I think Gunther comes out looking as strong as he did, but the fact that there's a little bit of give and take, even if his selling is short term, or especially because of selling a short term, it means his matches are watchable. He's not just plowing through people and no-selling. And, leaving. You can't do that with the size of roster they have. And, again, I use a Road Warrior example. I mean, it's just you end up an act without opponents. And you end up an act like a Goldberg or Road Warriors where it's very one-dimensional. To me, Gunther is just I think they put thought into it. And I think they're in a good spot with him. I don't think anybody's watching him go have a long match with any of the people he's had, including Ricochet tonight, and going, I guess I'm less intrigued to see what he would do against Brock Lesnar or Roman Reigns or whomever. I just don't think that's the feeling coming out of his matches. So I'm not concerned, Sean, but I think it's a legit consideration. I just think they've considered it.
Yeah, and that's what and that's why I was only asking it, because like I said, I mean, everything they've done has been really well, really good. I mean, I'm not, like, against what they've done. I was just, as I was watching the middle part of it, I felt at the middle, like, Ricochet was getting a lot of offense, like, a lot. I mean, it was quite a bit in the middle. Like, toward the end, I thought they did a really good job
like
you said.
The palm strikes, I thought, was a little much. Like, where did that come from? Like, I don't, is that a thing Ricochet does? Like, and they didn't look necessarily devastating because, again, it's not a thing Ricochet does to even, like, know how, at least on TV in the pro wrestling setting. I've never seen them do anything like that. But yeah, that spot and was 2 minutes in the kicks, but you have to give them something. We wouldn't be talking about how awesome the match was or the matches that he's had in the last 3 or 4 months, how good they've been, if the wrestlers he got to wrestle didn't at least seem like they could maybe win at some point or beat the guy up a little bit.
And boy, yeah. if Tony Khan and AEW do not have the Chicago market cornered for crowds being on their feet, reacting big time to in-ring action. This was a great crowd for WWE and a great crowd for this match. This match earned it. But, I mean, Gunther's over, and the fans cared about Ricochet. They were mm-hmm. popping. I thought it was a remarkable crowd reaction, Travis.
Yeah, yep. They gave them the sort of like the pop Roman Reigns gets, like you're a superstar, but boo.
Yep.
You know, when he wins, it's, yeah.
Cool. Sean, what else?
Yeah, so I did like the tribute to the troops stuff that, you know, they talk about. I do like, especially, you know, going back to when they were in Iraq. That was some good stuff back then, because obviously with everything going on in the world, that was it was fun to kind of look back at some of those. I thought they always do a good job with those kinds of packages. And I love going back to when Roman was backstage and doing all the stuff with Pierce and all that. I love when he was like, well, we're definitely not going to do it. Why would we do it in Chicago? We're not going to do it in Chicago. And I love when they do the subtle stuff like that. And I know the Chicago fans are like, oh, man, come on. Like, waiting 2 weeks for this match? Like, no, let's do it right now. Come on. So that was hilarious to me. That cracked me up. But the other topic I was going to bring up, and then I'll get off.
Sorry, Sean, but they popped at the end for Cena when he said, yeah, I'll be there. Because it's the end. They know how it's 5 minutes left in the show, or, you know, 2 minutes left in the show.
Yeah.
I'm just happy that they're going to have a match. Yeah, I'm not sad that it's not
here.
Yeah, that's great. One other thing I was going to say, too, which I thought was funny, is all these SmackDown women, like I said, are just getting beat up, man. There's not going to be much left of them when it's all said and done. Raquel might not have any body parts left when they get through with her, because, I mean, they already messed up her elbow, and now they're, I don't know when she might be, it might be a year before she gets back. But, no, the last topic I was going to bring up was, I know we were going to talk about it, and we have to, because the Triple Threat Tag Team match, okay, so, I mean, I'm sorry, Top Dollar, but that was bad, dude. That was really bad.
Why was that even attempted? Why did they let him do that? Why? He needs to be held responsible.
Know.
The producers of the match need to be held responsible. Like, they look like low-rent, mud show garbage. Like, don't do the, oh, I'm the athletic fat guy, because
describe what happened, Travis.
Dallas tried to do a friggin' dive over the top rope, like, you see 800 times on every wrestling show across every country or company. So he says, I want to get in on the sameness, the unoriginal move of the last decade. Guy's doing dives. Enough with the dives. And he paid for it because he's a 300-pound guy. Man, that shouldn't be trying to dives, especially over the top rope. And he failed miserably,
ugh,
which
bad.
I hope
should not have been on TV.
And maybe hurt his knee.
Yeah, that led into my point where, again, I'm all for, to me, you have, okay, I'm not a heel guy, but you should have Legado win that match. Legado del Fantasma needs to win that match. You need to be building them up. Hit Row, to me, just doesn't have the spice
enough
that they had when Swerve was there. I mean, Swerve was good, and then he left, and it's just not good anymore. And why are they're
Adonis
not ready to face the
Usos
for the tag team championships. No.
God, they should get smoked. And blame it on the knee. I don't care. But they should get walked through.
Yeah, I just thought that was really bad. I want to know, Wade, if you're not the same way as we are. But Hit Row does not need to be facing the Usos for the freaking tag team championships. Like, they are not ready for that spot. And whoever did that, it's just a dumb idea. Wade, are you with us on that? It was crazy. I didn't get it.
Yeah. I don't think they have shown. I mean, if they're building them up to just get a TV match out of them. I mean, that's going to happen in WWE. They want to create a backstory for why certain people are matched up against each other. And I don't want to be a hypocrite and say, the same people are facing the same people all the time, which was a real problem in recent years with WWE.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not, putting even pushing somebody or placing somebody in a match above their you know, actual slot and what they deserve and what the crowd, you know, the credibility of the crowd. I mean, there is part of me that's like, okay, I mean, but it is a tough choice because now you start really limiting yourself. The argument is, should Hit Row have a roster spot? Do they bring enough in other ways to make up for their shortcomings? And Travis, I think your answer is pretty clear, which is no at this point.
Absolutely not. They have such – the internet hates Hit Row. Internet in quotes. I don't see positive things about Hit. Every time I see somebody mentioning Hit Row, it's about how they shouldn't be on TV, shouldn't be getting the push they get, how boring or whatever they don't like about them. And I'm not sitting there reading the tweets or the articles going, "Nah, you just don't know good stuff." I'm like, I'm right there with you. They just don't. Top Dollar is a number two, right? He is the second in your faction that can talk and has personality, but he's not the lead guy. And Adonis is the ad-lib guy. He just, that's what he does. He shouldn't be really getting talk time.
Yeah.
And now, because Swerve is gone, and B-Fab is your hype man on the outside or whatever that gets, you know, your default valet and manager, announcer, whatever. But now the roles, everybody had to shift up a level. Now Top Dollar's the lead guy in the group because he has all the personality left outside of B-Fab, but as far as the guys who wrestle every week. Mm-hmm. And Adonis, again, he's the third. He's the ad-lib guy. He's, you know, rest in peace, Takeoff. He's the Takeoff of the group. And he don't say much, and he's quiet, and yeah, and now he has to be a guy that you count on, personality wise, even though he's, you know, he's fine in the ring. I don't think he's so great, but yeah, Hit Row is just not a hit.
Yeah. All right, Sean, anything else for us?
Yeah, and the last thing I was going to bring up about that match was I think it's the worst case scenario is I think you should have because they're you know. Trying to build up the Viking Raiders a little bit again, at least have them pin, like you said, Travis, have them pin Top Dollar or something and have them go against the Usos. Even though we've seen it, we know Viking Raiders aren't going to win. So at least build that up and then build Legato up to later on build up to that match. Because Legato, again, you have something there. Let's build that. Zelina's with them. Zelina's great.
Sure.
Do something with that. And so that kind of ruined it.
Bam,
that's really all
that
I had. Go ahead.
That spot they did where they did the, not even the high flying, you know, I just talked about dives, but the move that Del Toro now, I didn't know he had a name change, and the other one, Zmion, hit, they just did a spin, one of them did a spinning kind of thing, and the other, I was just like, wow, these guys, I haven't seen them since they were doing stuff in NXT, I haven't seen a ton of their, or not seen, I haven't been impressed with a lot of their stuff that they've done since they've been on the main roster, just kind of there for Zelina and for Escobar to kind of get over. But this was their kind of coming out deal, and I thought it was, yeah, I'm with Sean. I think they should have been the ones to win, or at least be set up that they that they're next in line. It was, yeah.
What were you on the Viking Raiders?
I don't care much for them.
Yeah, yeah. It's get repackaged, slightly repackaged, and you know they're still just the same act.
I didn't when they were the big hot stuff in Ring of Honor as the War Raiders. I didn't. I was like, you guys only like them because like they're fine workers, but they're just big guys and they're just not used to having big dudes in Ring of Honor, and I think that kind of made them more than what they were, and here we are.
Sean, thanks. I was good talking to you.
Yeah, I was going to say, too, Wade, I know Travis, well, I was going to say to Travis that Wade's probably sick of all the compliments. I think I told him last week that he's like, man, he's sick of all these compliments that I give him. But I actually got to listen to one show that I think is great, too, is Pro Wrestling Then and Now. Frank, did, you know, I lift him up all the time. He does a great job. But him and Todd did the last one on Starrcade, you know, Sting Hogan, and they did a really good job, so I wanted to prop that up, and Todd always does a great job, because Todd's awesome, like he always is, so I appreciate you, Wade. Travis, good to talk to you, man. Thanks for taking my call, as always.
Awesome. Thanks, Sean. Good plug. Yeah, some great VIP content from Frank on that Then and Now show. All right. Let's keep rolling through calls here. There's still time if you want to call. It's 347-215-8558. If anything we've said has sparked an opinion in you or you want to add to anything, feel free to push one or call and push one. You can also email us if that's easier, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, we'll go to Jay in Michigan next. Jay, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you. What did you think of SmackDown?
Jay in Michigan.
Travis, you're in charge.
Travis,
you're in charge,
man,
of Jay's jingle.
It's good to, you know what? Actually, I'm so glad you pointed that out, man, because that is like one of the prime reasons I called. I wanted to go into business for myself a little bit. Like, what do I got to do to get a jingle, man? I definitely held it down during the Thunderdome era, man. The PC, you know, the eras that WWE doesn't even acknowledge, and I feel like Wade, you won't even acknowledge those eras for me, man, because I really think I can have a jingle, man.
Javier got a jingle because one, I really respect Javier's analysis. Not that I don't callers, but I mean, if that's a prerequisite. But he's a PW Torch contributor. I mean, he's doing tons of stuff for the Torch. So he rose above being a valuable caller to being a valuable participant in the show who's contributing written work for the website and VIP podcast. Then Sean got one because he asked for one, and then Mike Myers created one for him. But I knew it was creating trouble. I knew it was going to cause trouble with people like you, Jay. I know I was just this a hornet's nest of you know, what about me? What about me? And so Sean knows how I feel about the fact, but I can't. You know, it's such a great jingle, and Sean wanted it, so I was like, all right, but this is like, you know, you make an exception or not. I wouldn't call it an exception, but, you know, whatever. I just knew this was asking for trouble. And we're not giving everybody
Listen,
a jingle.
I love Sean, man. I think Sean is quite possibly one of the nicest, sweetest human beings in the history of the world, man. This guy has nothing but compliments for everyone, like ultimate babyface, man. But honestly, I felt some type of way when I heard the jingle. I'm like, whoa, Sean got a jingle now? And, you know, but hey, I love Sean, man. And I did want to advocate for mine, but I understand, Wade, and you're right to do that, man. So I will digress into my
He's a rational human being.
I know. What's up with that?
Yeah, I didn't go full heel, man. I backed down. So
I just want to I just want to put all the heat on Sean. You know, yeah, and Mike. You know, they're the ones who I just am going along with it.
I love Sean too much to get.
Yeah, you only have the final
thing. It is. But you know, you're not gonna get me to go after Sean, man. That dude is just an absolute.
All right, we're losing our viewers. We're losing our listeners here. Let's get to some content.
Gosh, man, now I'm not even a draw. Okay, I'm bringing down the show now. Okay, so I guess I'll get into it. I'm wondering. You know, I did feel coming into tonight that we were kind of going to get something, you know, to move things forward with the bloodline. And I think it was small hints of it, Travis. I think you made some great references as far as how Roman's just being like, you know, the I can't remember the exact words, psychopath or something like that.
Sociopath.
But,
Sociopath,
yes. So Roman's kind of moving things along a little bit. But do you guys think that when we get to this match – with Cena, KO, Roman, and Sammy, do you think we actually get, you know, not Roman obviously getting pinned, but you know, you think Sammy loses and then that like continues to start the, you know, cracks in the bloodline? Because I just feel like, you know, obviously this is such a great story and I'm not tired of anything related to it, but I feel like when it happens and it's gonna happen, it's gonna be at a high point, but it's not gonna be at a predictable point. And I'm trying to like, you know, feel like when are we gonna get to this? Like, kind of if I reference back, man, and like, you know, I don't know how people feel about this now, but you know, remember the Jericho Kevin Owens thing, and it was like, you know, when their thing finally kind of came to an end, it was like people kind of saw it coming, but in the moment that it happened, I don't feel like people knew that it was going to happen in that moment.
Yeah, they did
it
in a really cool way, Yeah,
Jericho speaks very fondly of that. So, like, I'm looking for something like that to happen with the bloodline, you know. So, do you think that we kind of start to – I know I'm kind of skipping over this week, but do you think we kind of get to that in a couple weeks?
Yes. So, at the match in 2 weeks, Sami Zayn absolutely has to take the pin, right? And it's probably going to be John Cena pinning him. That makes the most sense. And – well, you know, bring him back, and he has a big feel-good moment, and he gets to pin the guy. So Sammy has been – remember before War Games where he was kind of fed up with Jay, and he came in – there was a – I think this was before War Games. You're right. He came into the backstage. He did a handshake with Jimmy, and he looked at Jay like – I'm not even dealing with you. Like, he was finally kind of, like, not being all, come on, Jay, just, I'm a pal, Jay, you can trust me, Jay. He was just like, man, I don't know what I got to do. Well, and he just kind of, he has his moments where he does stand up for himself, or at least, like, you understand his body language, his face tells that story. So I think what happens is he takes that pen, and he starts, like, what else can I do? Like, because in the match, he's going to go after Kevin Owens. He'll probably, maybe he'll heal it up against him when the ref's back is turned, eye poke and things like that. So people know he was trying his hardest. He was giving it to Kevin Owens. They're not pals, at least right now. He means it because look what he did to him. And so when he does lose, he's like, what the hell else can I do, Roman? You know, kind of a thing, and doesn't necessarily immediately go, oh, I overstepped, I'm sorry, but kind of holds his ground until Roman maybe stares him down a little. But there's that moment, and it just adds to it, and you go, oh, this isn't going to, you know, this is going to break eventually. And then Elimination Chamber in February is where, you know, you build to that however they do it, but I think that's where it happens.
Very good, Jake. Go ahead. Anything else?
No, Wade, what do you think, man?
I'm with Travis. That's why I didn't add anything. Okay. I think he's got the timeline and the dynamic down. I'm nodding along.
Do you guys think that we're getting Sammy and Roman at a Elimination Chamber? Because I feel like that might be a little too quick.
No, it's going to be the chamber. Like, everybody's going to be in
there.
Yeah,
everyone's in there. That's the issue.
Okay.
I don't think we're going to get a one-on-one Roman-Sammy match, even at WrestleMania.
Okay,
I think the timeline on that is further down the line, yeah. They have so much to play with here. So, there's so many chapters. This is not a short story. This is a novel. This might be a multi-season, you know, premium TV series. You can't wrap this up in one season. And they know it. They've already extended it. I think they're excited about it. I think they know they don't want to overextend it and lose people. But the performances and the dynamic, you got Solo, you got Sammy, you got KO in the mix now, you got Roman, you got the Usos. They can add people. They can have people go off to the side and kind of put some things on hold while they're in something else. There's so much they can do, and you know, you don't want to go past an expiration point or even too far past, or you don't want to go past the peak moment, but you also don't want to give up 3, 4, 5 months of programming or even an extra year of programming if you feel you can and you've got the ideas for it. I'm in absolutely no rush for Sammy to break away, but, you know, the go-to example, and there's others in wrestling history, but the Miz-Mizdow thing where it's like, just break up with him already. Everyone lost respect for Mizdow. Damian Sandow, because he didn't break up with Miz in time, and people lost faith in him. And so you don't want to be, you know, you don't want Sammy to be a schmuck who people completely lose respect for. You have to find the right story arc and timing. But that does not include, I don't think, Sammy against Roman one-on-one or a full breakup before WrestleMania. I think that's a story you tell after Mania. And then you can reassess that, how long you want to milk it.
Can I spitball this one idea, man, that I've kind of like really, I'm really starting to like dig in on that I would love to see happen? I want to see this play out, right, where we get like, you know, the whole thing with the bloodline is to carry your weight. So I would love to see them put Sammy with Gunther, have him have some great showings and lose, and then that starts to, like, you know, have some people looking at him in a little bit in the bloodline, like, dude, you got to get a title, you got to carry your weight, et cetera, et cetera. We carry this into the Rumble, where I actually would like to see Sammy win the Rumble. Wins the Rumble and refuses to face Roman at WrestleMania because that's his tribal chief, which opens the door and allows The Rock to face Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. Then, after we get through that, the night after Mania, the most epic, uncomfortable bloodline beatdown of Sami Zayn to get out in front of the fact that Sami Zayn is eventually going to come for the title. And then it's like you give that night after Mania moment, you have a huge moment that you will always remember, and you kind of get out in front of, like, you know, everything should be great with the bloodline. Roman just beat The Rock. Sammy's the Royal Rumble winner. He's done what he needed to do, et cetera, et cetera. You kick him out of the bloodline. You have him off TV for a few months. Then he comes back as a fired-up babyface. We get a Roman-Sami Zayn match at SummerSlam. That's my art to it.
Travis, I mean, there's so, so many good ways that this story can play out.
And that's not a terrible way.
And that's what I was going to say. And that's an example of Jay being invested in the characters. And it's a reward for what they've done to create layers and dimensions to not just Sammy, not just Roman, not just everybody in the bloodline, but the individual dynamic between everybody. And as Sammy and Heyman talked about in the Survivor Series post show, or press conference, I should say, the media Q&A, they're excited about this because there's some dynamics that haven't even been explored yet that they barely touched on. Heyman does not offer his opinion. What happens when he does? That's a moment.
My moment is when Solo offers an opinion.
That's the other one that they are
because
absolutely
that's the physical kind of one. Yeah. That's
a thing. I mean, those are the two.
I'm sorry, but to go, add to your point about invested in the storylines, we had this whole thing on Wednesday, when they finally take it off Roman, the walls have to start collapsing in on him, which means he can go too far with Sammy because he gets jealous, not jealous, but that because he's a sociopath. He's mad at Jay because just 6 weeks ago, you couldn't stand the guy. Now look at you, buddy-buddy with him. Like, but yeah. Roman, you're mad at me? You were mad at me when I was beefing with him. Now you're mad at me because I'm friends and I've seen that he's a cool guy and we can trust him? Like, we can't win with you, Roman. So he's pushing. He loses them. And then, you know, it'll be Solo with me. And Solo goes, no, dog, I'm not. And he leaves or something, and everything's just crumbling around him, and that's the end of, you know, for Roman. Like, they don't abandon him completely, but they're not, like, sycophantically just, you know, just agreeing with everything and doing all his bidding. They're like, no, you've gone too far. This is too much. So the point is there's so much stuff with this storyline where they can go, and it's got people invested where they're willing to invest and get excited and fantasy book where you don't feel like in the end it's just going to be standard or a letdown or whatever the old man's going to do, you know, whatever he's feeling on that day. It's like, no, they're talking about what they're going to do in April now or what they're going to do in August now. Like, and I trust that that this story is going to be told in a way that I can get my hopes up and I can fantasy book and go, oh, what if they did this? Or what if this guy reacted this way? And it's just fun again, I dare to say.
Yes. Jay, good scenario. I think there's, I don't want to nail down just one as the only way to go, and we have to kind of know about so many other things in terms of what they have in mind. But what you laid out, I think, is what WWE's fan base is doing. They're all sitting around going, what if this happened? I could see this happening. And wouldn't this be great?
It's very fun, man. Yeah. It's fun, man, and it's intriguing to, you know, to watch. And they always build to those moments when Roman's going to be there. So you know something's going to happen when Roman's around, and you have to kind of like, you know, you invest in the story, because it's like, you know, we still got to get some type of resolution today, saying I don't give a damn what the Tribal Chief says or Tribal Chief thinks. You know, we still got to get some type of moment there, and it's like, man, this story is just so amazing. I love it, and, you know, that's
people that say I'm tired of the bloodline, I go, what are you talking about? This is the best thing going. It's the best thing we've had in years, and you're tired of it? Like, everybody should get their turn type of
wrestling. I genuinely believe by the time this is all said and done, this could be the greatest story ever told, man. I really believe that. And like,
the Mega Powers exploding was pretty good, pretty well done, and paced,
it's hard,
you know,
to
out for a year.
It's hard to stop.
Yeah. Yeah, that one immediately comes to mind. But, yes, it will. But in today, yes, a modern, the last 20, 25 years, absolutely. Absolutely. Especially, there's been moments and there have been matches maybe that have been better and more bigger surprises. But, again, 800-something days or something, and layer on layer, and not a misstep in the layering. At least none that haven't been able to been smoothed over and or redirected in a positive way. Everything that they've gotten, like the Sami Zayn thing, he's turned out to be Steve Urkel. Like when they started Family Matters, they said, "Oh, he'll be the sidekick. He'll be the kooky neighbor that shows up maybe every three episodes." And he became a star in episode one. And they said, "We're going to sell dolls of this kid and make a ton of money." And they, when they got Sami Zayn in the Bloodline, and it worked the way it did, and even though it was only supposed to be a 3 or 6 week kind of story arc, they went, oh, we've got something good here. Let's run with it. Not, well, Sami's not supposed to be as over as he is, so now we got to make sure he doesn't, you know, it's like, no, we got something, and let's capitalize on it and run with it and make some damn money. Yeah,
exactly.
And they did it.
Jay, anything else for you?
No, I ain't got nothing else to add, man. I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. Nice fellas, man.
Yeah,
Travis, great to hear from you. Great to have you back. And Wade, as always, man.
Good to be heard.
You know, as always, Wade, man, you're awesome. And thanks for having me.
Thank you, Jay. Travis, you want to sing him up?
No, he got what he got.
Jay from Michigan. All right, cool. Thanks, Jay. All right. We got some emails to get to on Bray. I do want to get to Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. First up, Ryan, I bet you have multiple items, including some things that will stump us or that I will not have heard of. Go for it. What have you got?
I want to be the odd man out and disagree with you on Hit Row. I think they were the right choice to win tonight because they really impressed me last week at the Wheeling House show against the Maximum Male Models. I thought they played their role perfectly at the show, and I think maybe why they won tonight was Jamie Noble might have put a good word in for him being a road agent there. And also it makes sense that they're a babyface tag team, and usually you know, it puts the crowd in an awkward position when you have a heel versus heel match, say like the Viking Raiders against the Usos.
So the Viking Raiders are portrayed as heels? I thought they were kind of just badasses. They don't necessarily heal it up, do they?
Well, they're very vicious, and I thought anyone that's vicious tends to be a little. They like
they're new and
shield.
Improved and vicious.
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying, but yeah, I don't think they've done overtly heal things.
And what they might just be doing is management might be thinking, nah, Top Dollar can have a good match here and there, but we don't think a lot of them, but we want to get a TV match out of them. We got all these weeks, all these hours of TV to fill. We've invested in them. Let's put them out there and have the Usos beat them. I mean, not every feud is going to be FTR versus the Briscoes. Like, I mean, it's okay. I mean, you know, you can say, well, they shouldn't be on the roster. There's, you know, they're, it's a reclamation project from Triple H to show up Vince McMahon. He's not taking into account that Strickland is gone and he should be. And it's a big drop off. You know, you can make that case, but they are, as of this moment, they are on the roster. And if they don't disappear like Maximum Male Models, then you can make the argument. Let's just get them, give them a win and have them then lose to the Usos and move on. This isn't WrestleMania, you know? So, I mean, I just think the reality of what Paul Levesque and the whole writing booking team have to do is going to include trying to get something, salvage something out of an act that isn't necessarily going to peak any other time, but let's at least feed them to a top team and give them a little juice beforehand. And that's my assessment of what's happening. I think criticism, you can say, well, they should cut them or they should keep them lower on the card, but WWE just doesn't have enough depth in their tag roster where you can have someone on the roster who you are keeping and not in, not have them in significant feuds. You can't have in a tag division a healthy upper card, a healthy mid card, and a healthy lower card. They're not going to keep that many wrestlers on staff. So if you're going to have them there, give them a win and feed them to the Usos and then move on. And you bought yourself a week of, you know, a match on TV. That's my framing of it as a qualified defense, I guess. And Ryan, maybe they'll surprise us. You saw a good match with them at a house show. Maybe they'll come out there and not go splat. But I would say to bigger wrestlers, I will add this. I will say to anybody who thinks you're going to impress an audience because you're a really big guy who can do a dive, stop it. Wrestle your size. Bam Bam Bigelow, even Bam Bam Bigelow, I think.
He did lose off from the second rope, though.
Yeah. I mean, I having a big guy.
It's also a relatively safer move.
It is true. You're more in control of yourself. But even Bigelow, I mean, I was like, okay. I mean, and it's a controversial stance, but I thought Bigelow would have been a bigger star if he wasn't out there trying to do, you know, junior heavyweight moves. That doesn't build your character. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. I always use a Steve Austin and the banjo. Steve Austin can play the banjo. It doesn't mean he should incorporate a banjo into his routine. And if Bigelow can do a moonsault, good for him. Show off before the matches to your colleagues. But when you're wrestling in the ring, be a badass. Anyway, there's worse examples than Bigelow in the sense that, you know, it was kind of part of his shtick and it was at a time when people weren't doing it. But I'll take on the challenge to say, just like Kurt Angle was good at comedy but did too much comedy, Bigelow was good at that move, but it became kind of what defined him instead of other things that could have been more money. Anyway, Ryan, back to you for your next point.
My second question is on John Cena. Do you feel this show will have the highest viewership of 2022? I know they're handicapped being that so close to New Year's Eve and people may be on the road traveling for their plans, but maybe John Cena can bounce this out and do a record number for 2022.
Yeah, Travis, what do you think? I mean, that is tough, December 30th. It's not New Year's Day, but it is party night.
I think you get folks inside. One, it's December 30th, and it's cold a lot of places. It's finally gotten, you know, it's 48 degrees here today. Wait, I mean, you know, you imagine?
It's going to be negative 40 here next week.
Yeah.
So
I think people are going to be saving up because New Year's Eve is on a Saturday night, and they're going to go hard Saturday night for New Year's Eve to breathe it. So you're not going to, like, go nuts Friday. You might just chill.
True. That's true.
So I think this, I don't know if it'll do the biggest number of the year, but I think it wouldn't shock me if it came close. And because it's, you know, New Year's Eve weekend, I'm not going to automatically just assume people are going to be out partying. I think a decent amount of people are going to save up their partying and, what's better than the night before going out and partying and hanging out and watching some SmackDown?
John Cena. No, I think you make the case, and I'll just – Ryan, I think they will do like a top three viewership, but I don't think they just – even if they do the top viewership, I don't think it's by a wide margin because of the holiday weekend aspect in between Christmas and New Year's. I don't have the number – I could pull the chart out and, you know, look at some data, but you know, I'd have to see what they did in past years to come up and put some thought into it in terms of what I think they'll do. But I'm intrigued by it. You know, WWE's not throwing in the towel on a holiday weekend, you know, in between Christmas and New Year's. They want to let people know this is not a show to skip. We're not taking the week off. We're not phoning it in. A lot of, you know, people take Christmas and New Year's week off from, you know, what they do if they're public figures. And WWE's saying, don't check out on us. What else, Ryan?
Heavy question on this upcoming match. What's Pizzley going to do between Braun Strowman and Gunther? Do you think Gunther has the ability to make this the most memorable match of Braun's career as far as a in-ring work perspective?
Interesting. I am intrigued by this match. Yeah, I hadn't thought of it in those terms. What do you think, Travis?
I'm not really intrigued by anything Braun Strowman does, really. But if anybody can have a – not that Braun Strowman hasn't been proven capable of having good, exciting matches, but if anybody can get one out of him, it's Gunther. I'd wonder if they would just – if it would – I would worry that the match would just devolve into, you know, 15 minutes of kind of slugfest brawl kind of stuff. I would hope they would do more than just throw bombs and just go, oh, who can hit each other hardest. So I hope there's like some psychology to the match. I hope we're going to see Gunther selling certainly longer than he sold for Ricochet. So you'll get to see Gunther in some jeopardy and see him in a bit of a different light. So this is a time for Gunther to pull out, I don't know, some shenanigans, some good heel tactics, some good timing.
I'm intrigued in the sense that I want to know what they do. Do they protect Braun? Are they valuing Braun enough where, and we've seen Gunther's willing to go long distance with wrestlers who are, quote, beneath him in size or push or trajectory. Mm-hmm. It's intriguing that how we're going to learn how WWE feels about both guys relative to each other. And then, yeah, Braun, I mean, you know, years ago we were talking about Braun as, you know, how big of a star can he be? Is he the surprise breakout star from the Wyatt family? You know, will he grow as a character? We're past that. I think we kind of like have an idea that Braun's not, we know he's not going to be like the defining star of this generation or anything, but do you just feed him to Gunther as a stepping stone to get somewhere else? Or is this a full-fledged feud and do they find a way? And they're going to put thought into this. I think they're going to put thought into the match. They're going to very deliberately tell the story. I think every beat of the match is going to be revealing of how they feel about both guys and where they want to go with it. And I think they're doing a good job building anticipation for these two forces colliding. I think people just want to see how they match up physically. Braun has a big history, and Gunther's the new guy in town. I'm, as a WWE viewer who is intrigued with their booking choices, I'm looking forward to this.
I would have liked, this is just something that's just totally in my head, but I would have been really awesome seed planting to when they were going over how prestigious the IC title is and how many future Hall of Famers have held the title. I would have liked the line that said almost every single, you know, WWE champion held the IC title before everybody except Brock Lesnar. Or something like that. Like, not, they don't even have to say it like that to draw attention. But Brock Lesnar, the only, and just kind of have that hanging out there. So when Brock finally, or when Brock and Gunther have a match, I assume it's going to be for the IC title, and Brock can want that championship, and that gives him a storyline reason to want it. Like, yeah, I've never held that title, even though that's a silly kind of, like, well, there's a reason you never held that title, because you were good enough not to have to be Intercontinental Champion first. But there's, I think, something just to give that match some you know, extra kind of reason that Brock is targeting Gunther.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Anything else, Ryan?
Yeah, I have a question on this tribute to the troops they were promoting pretty heavily tonight. I believe, like in the past, they've been to an actual military base, but I know the last two or three years they've been having just with like the after SmackDown, goes off the air before it goes on the air. Is there a reason why they stopped doing them exclusively at the base? I know it being overseas is a little bit dangerous, but I don't know why they couldn't do it somewhere like the United States that would be a little bit safer.
Well, I mean, we have bases all over the world, so they could have, you know, imperialism at its finest. But they could have done it anywhere. But last year, a couple of years with COVID and stuff, I think that's probably going to be your easy answer of why they haven't done it at a base. Certainly, they're not a bunch of ongoing wars, or at least ones that we talk about so openly and hype up going on. So going to an active kind of war place isn't the ticket. They're not going to get the juice out of that they did when they went to Baghdad in the middle of all the action.
Right.
And why take that risk if you can't even get some good, real good PR stuff out of it?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Very good. Ryan, what else?
Final question I guess I have for you is on the Royal Rumble. Can you picture Roman Reigns being in there and getting thrown out by The Rock as the last two people in the Rumble, or you think that's too way out there for you?
Wait, Roman Reigns and The Rock, the last two?
Yeah. You know how sometimes they have the champion in the Rumble for whatever reason?
Yeah, they have. I mean, I don't rule it out, but I don't think you give that. I don't think you give physicality between them away, but, I mean, if you did, you could make it. It's not like it's the worst thing they could do. I just don't think they will do it. I think they're going to build up that intrigue.
Yeah. Ain't no way Roman Reigns is in the Royal Rumble.
You said no way?
No way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's my thinking, too. But, I mean, if I would – you could. It's not disaster. I don't think Roman – I mean, why would he go in the ring with the risk of, like, having to wrestle for an hour?
He'll have a main event championship match that night, probably against Sheamus or somebody.
Yeah.
To have him in the Rumble is – I don't understand why they would do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Ryan, anything else?
I don't know if you know the answer to this, but has your buddy that does the trading cards say anything about these new cards that they've been promoting throughout the show? The Chronicles, I believe they're called.
What you? How'd you phrase that? You said my buddies? I'm confused. Or did
You have a friend, I think, that works at a card shop. I think his name's Kelly.
Oh, Kelly Wilson.
On Wilk, XT show. Yeah, I don't know if you say anything
about
these. If you say anything about the new cards that they.
Oh yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know.
All right. Yeah, I just know that they've been advertising it for about a month now, coming soon. But I don't think there's been any payoff on showing them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm. It's just not my bailiwick. Anything else, Ryan?
I think that's it. Thanks for the bonus questions, and maybe we'll talk to you sometime next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Ryan. Have a good weekend. All right, let's go to the mailbag here, Travis. Just a couple things here, and we'll wrap up. JG has a idea here. Actually, I'm going to save that. I'm going to do the other one first. Jay from New York says, "Hey, Wade and Travis, I just watched the Bray Wyatt LA Knight segment on SmackDown, and something came to mind. Bray is, in my opinion, the most creative guy in wrestling today. Whether it's The Fiend, the cult leader, or the demented Mr. Rogers, Wyatt was playing three characters. While I still think he's Uncle Howdy, and that was a decoy, I also feel that the segment exposed the greatest flaw in Wyatt's presentation. The characters he creates don't fit a pro wrestling environment. Wyatt would be an awesome Wyatt would be an awesome villain for a psychological thriller like The Bone Collector or Kiss the Girls. I think he'd have made a wonderful antagonist on Criminal Minds. It doesn't fit wrestling. Guess the same could have been said about an undead 7-foot zombie named The Undertaker, but he made it work. Wyatt has an uphill climb to fit his characters next to Gunther and Roman Reigns. What are your thoughts?" Well, we got some of your thoughts, Travis. Yeah. It is an uphill battle. I mean, Undertaker is sort of an exception. What's your assessment of Bray? I mean, people are intrigued by him. He creates a buzz. My issue is, what is the payoff? you know, with him? And is the payoff good enough in the ring without a bunch of bells and whistles and cinematic stuff and gimmick matches and all that? And but if that is what the payoff needs to be, is it still worth it to have somebody a little otherworldly in your mix?
Yeah, Undertaker worked because there were territories still around when Undertaker debuted. It was just a different time. Fans were willing to buy different things. Not currency-wise, but, you know, tolerate certain things, I should say.
Yeah.
Bray doesn't fit, at least the things that they've tried. A lot of the things they've done, that was my biggest issue with the with the Firefly Funhouse stuff. It's like, as cool and as, like, creative and good as some of this stuff is, it doesn't fit. Like, why is it here? Why?
Yeah.
But the idea of, like, being villain on a villain of the week kind of deal on, like, one of the TV dramas, you know, crime dramas. It's like, oh, yeah, I'd see it, like, if he was more of a reoccurring villain on, like, a CW superhero show. If he was a Flash villain or a Supergirl villain, like, oh, yeah, absolutely. There's stupid puppets going around town, you know, doing bad guy shenanigans and, you know, henchman things. That'd be cool. But, yeah, segment every week or a couple times a month on TV with his cartoon friends, that's just not it.
Yeah.
And even as the Fiend getting punched, you know, getting a sledgehammer to the head and popping up and doing all that stuff. That was just...
There's a lot of... Yeah, I mean, there's stuff WWE does where you just sort of, you know, it's in the moment, and then you kind of, you just can't think about it going forward because it's so outside the narrative structure of everything else. And it's not my favorite stuff. I mean, I get during the pandemic, they're just, you know, we got to try different things and kind of keep pumping oxygen into the show and in creative different ways, you know, with cinematic matches and that kind of thing. But when you're out of it, I mean, I think wrestling is great and wrestlers are talented and charismatic promos are fantastic and hard-hitting matches like we saw the crowd react to with Ricochet and Gunther. That's what you should build your show around. And when you have a logical structure that's consistently applied to that product, you benefit in so many ways, and there is a price you pay when you break from that. And I think there's a lot of people who are in positions of creative power who think that they want to change things or be innovative. And to me, it's like somebody, you know, at a website or newspaper deciding, you know, the grammar rules are kind of bland. Let's add some new symbols and let's add colors to our words and let's add hearts and emojis after straight journalism stories. It's like, no, save that for the girl in junior high sending a letter to her pal. But if you're a wrestling company, you don't need to get all you know, creative and, oh, this has never been done before. Right, because everybody made money in this business before you thought of that or had it pitched to them, and then they fired the person who pitched it because it's stupid.
They accepted the fact that they're pro wrestling and didn't have to prove to the world that they're everything except pro wrestling.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, we're a movie company and we're this and we're that and we can do this.
So, yeah, so as a policy, you know, just be good at the job you're in or go do something else. Go do a movie or an independent movie or whatever. But if you're pro wrestling, try to get a crowd reaction like Gunther and Ricochet got for telling a wrestling story and don't do this all this other stuff. Now, that said, I'm not hard and fast, but I think that should be – I'm not inflexible on that, but that should be the foundation, and any break from it should take into consideration the price you're paying in exchange for what you're getting. And make sure you're doing it for the right reason and not a lack of fundamental knowledge and understanding of the history of this business and what works and what wrestling fans, I think, really truly want, instead of chasing non-fans or people who aren't going to be excited by what Gunther and Ricochet did tonight. All right, up next, JG says, when Uncle Howdy came out, he purposefully kept his hands up, holding his jacket the same way the $1 Million Man would hold his jacket while laughing. Along with a clear emphasis on the laugh at the end of that segment, it makes me wonder if Uncle Howdy is not so much based on Bray's real-life Uncle Barry Windham, but rather it's based on Ted DiBiase, Bray's father's tag team partner in Money, Inc. What do you think? Any chance of that? Travis?
I would be very impressed at that pull. Not even because I want to see it, but because six fans would be like, oh, yeah, I totally get that. I get where they're – without being told, I mean. Like, eventually they would go, oh, yeah, sure. But I don't know. That's – if it's Million Dollar Man, to what end? To what end is 70-year-old Ted DiBiase going to bring to that act on a weekly basis? I don't think much, if anything.
Well, what if Barry Windham was a plan and then the heart attack derailed things, and so they're like, well, here's our audible. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a stretch. The guy who came out looked like he had no neck. Doesn't mean the person who's revealed ultimately
going to be that person. Yeah.
Who was on the stage, yeah. But I mean, I didn't think of that, but when he described the holding his jacket while laughing, the emphasis on laughing, which I thought, you know, the cartoonization of the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase is one of my great disappointments in wrestling fandom. I thought Ted DiBiase just phoned it in for so long with the laugh that didn't feel authentic at all. It felt like someone pulled a string on a doll, and he just did the same thing. I mean, it worked for him, and he's an iconic character and all that. I think he could have been better if he was more nuanced and less, you know, just one-dimensional cartoonish. So that's just my side rant because I was such a fan of DiBiase and had high hopes for him, and I think he just dumbed it down to being kind of too one-dimensional and phoning it in. But if they had to call an audible and it turned out to be him and it was revealed to be him, I don't know how you – like, I don't know what the backstory is on how we go from Million Dollar Man to DiBiase to a guy who's playing this diabolical sort of mystical character, mind effing Bray Wyatt and attacking LA Knight. I mean, that's a big reach. So yeah, I don't know, but it's a part of the fun of, you know, guessing, and maybe they were trying to send a message out there. Maybe Uncle Howdy is going to take on characteristics of different people in Bray's life, and this is just an example of it, and we'll have some sort of reveal or expository explanation.
As I said to William earlier, the Uncle Howdy stuff has been around. Uncle Howdy has cut entire promos. We know what his voice sounds like, or at least, you know,
a distorted way.
Nothing about that was DiBiase-ish.
No.
And again, they never talked about Bray Wyatt in the context of him being a legacy wrestler.
Yeah,
they don't talk about him in that. So all of a sudden, even if Wyndham was perfectly healthy and ready to be put on TV in a given moment, I don't think that works. I don't think anyone would care. One, it's a name my dad or uncle or somebody, not me, 42-year-old Travis, but I know who he is, but. Half the audience is going to be like, who? They're going to say, I kind of know who that is, but I can't picture his face.
Yeah, I think you're underestimating.
I don't know his finishing move.
I think you're underestimating the timeless, iconic knowledge of the Million Dollar Man character. Maybe I'm
No. I was talking about Wyndham.
Oh, were you? Oh, good. Okay. Then
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. Then totally. I'm with you on that.
That's why I said if Wyndham was perfectly healthy and ready to be put on TV at any given moment, the crowd would be like, okay, I guess, sure. But because they haven't even been, not even a shot at Wyndham or, disregarding what he's done, but they just haven't primed the audience because they don't talk about Bray Wyatt in that context. They don't talk about him as being son of a pro wrestler.
Right.
A legacy. So even though he is.
Yep. Good point. Woody's not a damage control. They were in the opener, Sky and Kai with Bailey at ringside, against Tegan Nox and Liv Morgan. Just any thoughts on that, Travis?
They're really trying to make that work, and they're doing an okay job. Like, they're doing just enough where it's justified that they're on both. They cross shows. They're in major stuff. They're tag champs, so I guess that's kind of the built-in reason, and it was a tag title match. But Damage Control to me, ever since the excitement after SummerSlam wore off, it's like, why are these three friends? Like, there's not three, a thread that that just naturally you go, oh, well, because they're all former cheerleaders or whatever.
Yeah, no, I made that case early on. I was like, there should be some vignettes of that define
they gave
who
it
they
lip
are,
service.
What the dynamic was.
They gave it Dakota in her promos. Bailey came and got me and kept and lifted my chin up, and Bailey would say similar things, but.
Like,
I mean, you're telling me instead of showing me that's how you guys, you know, they don't hang out. They don't, even if they did hang out, what would they do? Because they're all so different. And why are they friends?
And that was my point early on with them. It isn't obvious what their bond is. And my random idea was they take selfie videos in public, making fun of people in a mean-spirited way. And they're the type of people who like to people watch but cut people down. Mm-hmm. And they just go around making fun. Or something like, and again, that's just a spitball. Sit down, talk it out, and go, we want some vignettes to show why we should dislike these people, but also what negative trait brings them together as a faction. And we didn't get that. And so it's felt hollow.
And it's been four or five months and we still haven't gotten it. And I said this a couple of months into Bailey, probably after, it was probably the sit down interview, or was it maybe a contract signing or something Bianca and Bailey had, and Bianca crushed it. Like she was so amazing, and Bailey was just okay. And I'm thinking, I think Bailey as a heel without her inherent humor isn't a good heel. She's just not effective. If she, like, Ding Dong Bailey was great. Talk show host Bailey was fantastic because she got to be funny and got to, you know, cut people down and talk a bunch of crap to the crowd and to whoever she was interviewing on her show. And that Bailey was very effective and worked for me. This Bailey that I'm supposed to take super seriously, I can't. She's just so generic. Oh, these idiots. And it's just like, gosh, is this like – heel promo 101. She's out there every week out, and week in and week out. So I think not being able to inject some of her humor and some of her natural kind of fun charisma into it, even as a heel, is affecting her effectiveness.
Yeah, she showed up like I'm made, but I'm also over it. I'm a legacy star in this women's division, but I don't really have a lot of thoughts anymore. So I'm just going to show up, do 101 stuff, earn my paycheck, clock in, clock out. That's whether that is her attitude or not, I do not know. I'm not accusing her of that. I'm saying that's what the end product looked like. And she has been better than that at every other stage of her public life. So, it's just been a disappointment.
She also hasn't had to carry a faction, so
yeah,
I don't know if it's, I don't know, the pressure or the – I don't think it's that. I think she can handle pressure perfectly fine. We've seen that. But I think it's because she's like, what do we – she probably thinks of what I'm thinking. Like, why are we even together?
Yeah, that's true. Yes.
And I can't get behind this because we're not homies. Like, this isn't like a natural kind of thing. Go ahead.
Anything else from SmackDown you want to bring up before we start off here?
No, I think we hit all the, I don't think Tegan Nox is it. Like, I don't, I can keep trying with her, but at least, I do. It's not specifically SmackDown, about SmackDown, but Monday when we got the opener with the women, and that was like a 25-minute, and we had the stuff with Bliss and Bianca, which was fantastic. When they went to a commercial, or before we went to commercial, we had the vignette, or we had the backstage interaction between Gable and AJ and OC, and then they came back with the match, and I was like, oh, that's why they were showing us what happened. And before that, it would have just been Chad Gable versus AJ Styles. No real reason to care why this match is happening. So just the little things that is being done, like inset interviews. I haven't seen a ton of inset interviews, but just promos and giving people the
The just letting wrestlers talk for 30 seconds about an upcoming match makes such a big difference. I don't know why, but it really does. It doesn't even have to be a good promo or a good interview. Let me know you care, that you're thinking about your match before it actually happens. Like,
yeah. Exactly. I wanted that for the Elite against Death Triangle Wednesday. I wanted just a locker room shot. Just, you know, Alex Marvez, $8. What do you think? About the state of this this match?
Tony Khan was so excited because he used the NBA on NBC music, but didn't do any of the things the NBA would do in that situation where you got a big game and we're at the locker room, we're going to try to get a word with Steph Curry before he comes out or whatever. Like, didn't do any of it. Nothing.
So much. Show them arriving at the building with their headphones on and and their outfits and set the tone for who they are instead of assuming everybody watching your show watched Tokyo Dome specials 5 years ago, and are voting in the Observer Awards. Like, it's just tell a story. You got so much to work with there, I know he'll actually just get right to the action, but he's overestimating, you know, setting the table. And like you said, it's just a little bit goes such a long way in terms of just. What is their mood? The Bucks, that's a whole other topic, but like the Bucks and Kenny should be in a different mood every week, and we should experience it firsthand through the production of showing their body language, their demeanor, how are they different this week than 2 weeks ago, the last match they had. We should be given that information visually and audibly, and we're not. And that's, I don't think that's a profound or too much to ask or even a controversial ask.
This might be controversial, and AEW fans will probably yell at me, but this is 2008, 2010 TNA with better wrestlers, with better younger wrestlers. We're wasting another opportunity for Big Two, and a number two, somebody legitimately vying for the number one wrestling spot. You know, challenging WWE, and the more, it's just better talent and better people in the company, but we're still, this opportunity is being squandered.
I think TNA was overbooked and didn't have a philosophy. And I think AEW is underbooked and has a philosophy, but it's too narrowly focused too often. So I think there's differences, sure. But the idea that there's a platform that they're not taking full advantage of due to things that are in their power. Yeah. But hopefully 2023 is going to be different. I mean, they're brought in the new producer guy, and they've got, they're going to be making some apparently visual changes. We have a story on PWTorch.com about that, upgrading the look, freshening things up. And I thought the show Wednesday this week showed some steps in the right direction, but we have to see it, you know, consistently and build on it for us to turn it into more than happenstance. I Todd Martin thought it was just, you know, the same show it's been, and it's been good. And I thought it was notably different, but with the asterisk of, you know, is it happenstance or actually part of a move philosophically towards fixing some of the things that I think have been shortcomings. All right. This is a SmackDown Post Show. We can really start a whole new chapter if we do this as we just started. Mm-hmm. So we'll wrap up there. Thanks, Travis. Check out EastCoastCast.com. Check out Travis every week on the PW Torch East Coast Cast, a long-running show covering more than just wrestling. Travis, thanks. Good to talk to you.
It was fun, Wade. Thank you.
You bet.